Mark Caffiero, your host, and today we have a very exciting guest. Jeff Korn is the CEO of Virtuance Real Estate Photography. So, as a former photographer myself, I understand the critical role that photography plays on our competitive advantage for any business, really, but real estate being among the most important of all. So I knew I wanted to get a representative here from a real estate photography company so that we could talk a little bit about that. So I went to the internet and started searching. And I have to say, it's amazing how much terrible real estate photography exists out there. I found photos that were just shot with terrible lighting, with blown out highlights that came through the windows, photos that were shot at terrible angles, making rooms look small and unattractive. And then on the other opposite end of the spectrum, I found photos that had been so overdone with Photoshop, with HDR, grass on the lawn that's greener than a Disney cartoon. I just don't know what's worse, overdoing it in post-processing or just lazy photography. But I got to the Virtuance website. I knew right away, this is a company who knows how to represent businesses and properties with really well-done, clean photography. So fortunately for us, even though they serve the entire U.S., they are based here in Denver. And even better, Jeff, the CEO, he's a fun guy. He seemed ready for a Moscow Mule, which, as you know, is the theme for my happy hour segment. And even though he was a little bit reluctant at first, he eventually made his way over. And I'm glad that he did because we had a really good time. So we talked about much more than just photography, actually. Jeff talked about the future of real estate, what it means to agents. He talked about his thoughts about artificial intelligence, and so much more. And I'll stop my intro now. Please enjoy our interview with Jeff Korn from Virtuance Real Estate Photography. Thanks so much for being here. Appreciate you taking the time. I know you're probably a very busy man, and we really appreciate you having you here.
So. Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Mark. Appreciate it.
I actually have a friend who's a photographer. He's a real estate photographer. He works actually for one of your competitors, and he could not make it, but he recommended Virtuance. So I'd say that's, you know, a pretty nice compliment for you guys.
Well, whoever he is, I appreciate it. happy to be here for sure. Glad we could do it.
And then last week, you know, we were trying to get on, and both of us got right. Some sort of little bug, which is kind of funny, but I'm glad that we're here together, and I'm anxious to learn a little bit more about you and your company. So let's start with you, actually. I've got a few questions because I read up about you a little bit online, and I went to your website and pulled up your bio here. There you are.
And where is this going?
Yeah, exactly. But so you started in journalism, is that correct?
That's right. Yep. It was a dream of mine from the age of, I'd say, 12 or 13. You know, at that point in time, if you asked me, I'd tell you I'm going to be a TV reporter. That was it. So, that was the track I started on. I was the speech and debate dork in high school.
You know,
and did everything that I thought I needed to do to get to the point where I could be a TV reporter. Long story short, did that got to the point where, you know, had all the internships, all the assistant jobs, all this stuff, all through school and everything. And then, finally landed what I thought was my dream job, happened to be in a small town called St. Joseph, Missouri. Lasted about a year. Lots of stories in that year I could tell you about, but yeah.
So you were literally on the field. You were, Were you an anchor man, or were you
I was the political reporter, essentially, for an affiliate that covered all of Northwest Missouri.
Okay.
So for ABC. So
yeah.
So what that looked like is I was the guy out in the field with the ruler when it snowed, right?
Yeah, nice.
And when there was a political scandal, as big of a political scandal as there can be in Northwest Missouri, I was there covering it. It was anything and everything.
And
small town news.
You even worked with Barbara Walters and who else was that's mentioned here?
John Stossel.
Yeah, yep. John Stossel
when
with
he
the
mustache,
was, right?
Yep, the mustache. And
yeah.
I guess little secret. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but okay. I already said that I'm going to. So The mustache and a bunch of fake hair, actually. One thing that was really interesting is before he goes on air, every single time, he has somebody spray fake hair on his bald spot so that it doesn't show. But
I think I saw an infomercial for that one time many years ago, the spray hair thing.
Stossel's keeping him in business.
So how closely did you work with, say, Barbara Walters? How did that happen?
How did it happen? So, you know, they always say it's not necessarily what you know, it's who you know. So I landed an internship, with on 2020.
Oh, nice.
And so this was when John Stossel and Barbara Walters were the hosts of 2020. So I worked much more closely with John Stossel. He wrote a book. He was writing a book at the time called Give Me a Break. That was sort of his famous segment. Called Give Me a Break, How I Exposed Hucksters, Cheats, and Scam Artists and Became the Scourge of the Liberal Media. I'll never forget it.
Nice.
So I worked with him very closely on writing that book. I'd like to think I had something to do with it becoming a bestseller, but probably not. I worked with him on the book, and then I worked with him on producing segments for the show for 2020. Barbara Walters, worked with her a little bit, but much more with John. An experience. I'll say that, an experience. Great. They're both great people. They really are great people.
Well, I always admire someone who can grow a mustache like that, to say the least. So he's right up there with Magnum PI, as far as I'm concerned.
He certainly got the mustache.
Yes. Yeah. So then you made a pretty dramatic turn from journalism into real estate. So from what I understand, you went into real estate development from there. Is that correct?
You know, what happened was I was working in this tiny little town. This is after being in New York City at ABC. I worked as a production assistant a little bit in St. Louis at a station. And then when I got the on-air job, it was this tiny little town. So, you know, politics in a small town really means economic development, and economic development is, hey, who's building what, that's bringing what jobs to town. So I ended up getting to know a lot of real estate developers through the work I was doing there. And, you know, at the end of the day, I was having more fun talking to them about their projects and what they were building in the real estate market and how that all worked than I was doing my job. So, you know, after a few months of that, it became apparent to me that, hey, this is a fun world. I want to learn more. And I moved back to Denver, went to University of Denver for grad school, and came out with a business degree in real estate development, and went, one thing led to another, and worked for a REIT for a while, worked for a small developer. And then, you know, ultimately that sort of led into what we're doing today.
Great. Yeah, John here. He went to University of Denver, didn't you, John?
Nice. There you go.
Yeah. So now back to the reporting. I forgot to ask you one of the questions I had. Your profile says that you've got a lot of crazy stories from your reporting days. Just real quick, just give me the quick craziest story that you can think of right now from reporting.
Craziest story. Oh, gosh, put me on the spot. Crazy. One of the memories that I'll never forget is being, I got to know, some of the folks on the police force, and, they would tell you tips of, you know, hey, what's happening and whatnot. So I got a tip from one of the cops that, there's going to be a meth bust. And you know, this is small town Missouri. Meth is something that, you know, it's not uncommon to hear about meth busts. But never did I really, most reporters don't have an opportunity to be involved in the bust itself. You're usually covering after the fact.
Right.
So this guy tipped me off to the fact that there was going to be a bust. So I ended up hiding out in the bushes of this guy's house in the front yard for probably, they didn't say the exact time this was going to happen. So we brought a live truck down there. We parked it kind of behind the hedges so no one would see. I literally hid in the bushes for probably an hour and a half because we didn't know when they were going to come. I'm literally just sitting there with a reporter notebook, you know, just hiding out of the bushes. It's like 9 o'clock at night. It's dark out. We're in the middle of nowhere. And then all of a sudden, the cops start pulling up and we started recording. And so So I was there, like, that was a guy that literally like jumped out of the bushes as soon as the guy gets arrested. And then we did, I remember we did a live shot. We're live on the air talking about this bus that we were the first ones to hear about and all this. And, as I'm standing there doing the live shot, this woman's I see running at me from, you know, across the street. She's running full speed ahead, straight at me. And she's screaming at me, "This guy's not guilty. He didn't do anything wrong." I'm live on the air. She's literally running. I see her out of the corner of my eye, and my cameraman actually had to go out from behind the camera and stop her, tackle her so that she wouldn't, you know, you hear about stories of people, you know, on the air, people making fun of live reporters and whatnot. And it was just, one of those moments where I thought, oh my gosh, what the heck am I doing out here at 10 o'clock at night in the middle of nowhere, about to get tackled at a meth bust. So
I'd imagine your heart was probably racing as you were sitting there, you know, in anticipation of what was about to unfold. Were you nervous?
For sure. I mean, it was exciting. I'll tell you that. There was excitement for
I will say that, you know, a lot of people really enjoy funny cat videos on the internet. And one of my favorite things actually are, bloopers, reporters,
right,
you know, having a blooper. So that's a good thing. Well, thanks for the story. And then since you've been into Colorado, you're a pretty big Colorado guy. So you like skiing, you like climbing some mountains, you like sailing and so on. So
you don't think of sailing when you think of Colorado.
No, but it's not the first thing that comes to mind, right. But that's pretty cool. So do you have a boat out here?
I've got a tiny little sailboat out on Lake Dillon.
Oh, Lake Dillon.
And that's, you know, that's kind of my happy place, is being out on the boat on the lake. I just love the serenity of it and the freedom and the peace, you know, just being out. Nobody's telling you what to do, right?
Yeah.
You can kind of go anywhere you want to go.
It's a good place to disconnect. Yeah. And Lake Dillon in particular, it's beautiful out there. I used to live out there.
Did you?
So, yeah, very nice. And then you climb a lot of these 14ers, which is something that we hold in common. I love, I've been, you know, on a journey for the past 20 years, just trying to bag a few peaks every year. What's the most memorable that you've climbed so far?
The most memorable, without a doubt, for me is Conundrum. You know, Conundrum Peak. Not because it's such a difficult peak, but because I was showing off to a couple out of state buddies. You know, came in town and we said, yeah, we're gonna go climb Conundrum Peak. And so I don't know if you're familiar with Conundrum Hot Springs up there by Aspen. So we did the hike in. It's like 8 or 9 miles in. We're going to camp out that night, and then we're going to climb the peak. Well, my high quality planning, the trail actually starts from the other side of the peak, not from the hot spring. So we got there and realized that we were on the wrong side of the mountain.
Oh, great.
So long story short, we ended up trying to climb the peak and, from the wrong side. And it was just a scramble all the way up. And when we got to the top, we realized that this was not actually Conundrum Peak. We climbed Castle Peak.
Oh.
So the most memorable is when I climbed a 14er, but it was the wrong 14er. And there was no way to get down. We couldn't come down the same way we came up. And that story continues, but we don't have enough time right now. But lots
exactly.
of
yeah, you know, that's the case.
Those are
the
memories that you remember, right?
You get
all the screw ups, the mistakes. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, great. Well, let's talk a little bit about Virtuance, because that's really why you're here. And one thing that struck me when I looked at
I'm wondering, first off, why am I the only one taking sips of this Moscow Mule that you poured,
sips,
right?
I was starting to feel a little self-conscious
okay,
myself.
Okay.
So we're on the same page.
Don't want everyone to think that I'm just sitting here drinking by myself, right?
Well, this is, by the way, to our audience, this is kind of a new segment that we're experimenting with. And I'm calling it happy hour because I want it to be casual and fun and laid back. And honestly, I feel like, you know, a little cocktail never hurt anyone. And if anything, it just livens things up.
We can say it's 5 o'clock Friday, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, the first thing that I noticed when I went to your website, I went to your About Us page. So I'm going to go there real quick. And I love this because when you go to the team, I think I've got it right here. So you have, you know, what looks to be a pretty typical about page. But then when you roll over all the images, I love what you've done. And what that does to me is just kind of shows what a fun culture that you've created there at Virtuance. Can you speak to that at all, or what do you have to say about the people that you're working with and how you've built such a great, fun team?
For sure. No, I mean, what I'll say is that culture is everything in my experience. And we've worked really hard to build something that we're really proud of. I've worked for companies in the past where, you know, all due respect to the companies I worked for, but there are things sometimes that I learned more about what not to do than what to do. And I always said that, you know, if I were ever in a position where I could make this what I wanted to make it, then we're going to make sure that there's authenticity, we're being real, we're human, right? We're not just some corporation, company. We all have our own personalities. And, you know, for us, culture has been something that at the beginning was very organic. I was the guy who would poo-poo this whole, all the company values and culture and all of that, because, you know, you could walk into any startup office and I could probably tell you what their values are without you even telling me the name of the company, right?
Sure.
Because they're all pretty similar.
Yeah.
So the magic is in what you do with them. It's not what you say about them. And for us, about 3 years into founding the company, we realized that, we looked around and said, we've got a pretty awesome team here. And it's kind of happened by accident. We've gotten lucky. But in order to really take that to the next level and make sure we maintain that, we really do need to be more purposeful about it. So so we were really, really explicit that at that time, this is about 5 years ago now, we took the whole company out to a nice dinner, and we sat around drinking some wine for 3 or 4 hours, just talking about what's important to us. Mm-hmm. And that conversation was the beginning of what led to our company values, and the culture has come as a result of that. So I would say that, you know, I've done a real 180, because when I started the company, you know, we said, culture, schmulture, who needs that? And at the end of the day, it's everything. And the team we've got is fantastic. They make the magic happen. And so I just can't say enough about how important it is to let people be people.
Yeah.
And show that.
Absolutely. That's one of the things I really appreciate about working here at Revolve is, you know, we're in tight quarters and we're a fairly, you know, smaller size group here in the Denver office. So we work very closely with each other. And, you know, it's so important to surround yourself with people who not only can you work well together, but have fun with. And it looks like you've done a great job of doing that. So,
well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, just from what I'm seeing it with Revolve, you know, it's the same thing. I mean, it's apparent when that exists and when it's real.
Yeah.
It's more than just putting some writing on a wall about values or whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the second thing that struck me about, your website here is just the quality of the photography here. And one thing in particular, and I'm going through your gallery, and I've seen a lot of real estate photography and I've looked at a lot of listings. And typically I see photography in kind of two categories. There's the first category where it's like, okay, you've hired a photographer and it's obvious that they don't specialize in real estate photography, because the angles might be a little bit different. And there's a lot mm-hmm. more to photography than I think agents or anyone that's not a photographer realize that goes into it. So camera angle is a big one. So for example, you shoot too high and makes the room look a little bit too small. And if you shoot too low, then you know you get perspectives that aren't ideal. And so I can definitely tell a difference between a photographer who specializes in real estate photography and one who doesn't. And the work that I've seen from your website, you could tell that you've hired a lot of specialized photographers here. And I know that they probably have a life outside of real estate and they shoot a lot of other stuff. But when I look at the work that I see on your website, it's obviously very good. The properties that you show off are very good. But there's something different about what I'm looking at here that's not just your run-of-the-mill real estate photography. So is there a certain way that you train your photographers to try to keep the experience consistent and uniform, or do you encourage your photographers to take risks? Tell me a little bit about how that works for your company.
Yeah, good question. So, you know, we're one thing that I think a lot of folks don't necessarily understand or appreciate who aren't in the photography space is that the magic of a photo happens in two places. It doesn't just happen on site, and it doesn't just happen after the fact. You need both of those things to come together. Mm-hmm. And as you know, with your photography experience, I mean, post-processing, in particular in today's world, is everything.
Yeah.
It's unheard of to have a professional photo that has not been edited in some way. That's just the way that the world works. And the fact is that, you know, the camera tries as well as it can to recreate what the human eye sees. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you things you know. I mean, the human eye is an incredibly complex
yeah.
machine, and we don't have cameras that can do what the eye does. So what we try to do is recreate that, so you get the same visceral, you know, emotional reaction you would have if you saw it with your own eyes. You get that from a photo. That's what we're trying to achieve. So to answer your question, it starts off with the photographer. Mm-hmm. We absolutely, you know, we've photographed hundreds of thousands of individual properties at this point. And as a result, you know, we like to think that we've learned a thing or two about what it is that actually creates that visceral reaction. Mm-hmm. So that starts with the composition. And we absolutely, you know, we work to find photographers who obviously have the experience shooting, but also have the ability to really interact with a client in a way to understand what the client's really looking for. Mm-hmm. Because there are certain things about real estate photography that for sure are formulaic, if you will, in that we know what pops, we know what buyers want to see. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to create art like you might be in some photography. This is for commercial purposes. Our goal is to stand right beside the agent, help them win more listings, help them sell faster. And so we definitely train our photographers on what it is, what kind of compositions do that best, what rooms, what angles, all of that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you know, we do, our photographers are the ones out in the field. They learn much more than we know very quickly. And so we do, you know, ask them to take some risks where there's an opportunity to do that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there are certainly guidelines around what do we need to do in order to sell this property as well as we possibly can.
Yeah, and I agree. It's definitely easy to overdo it as well. And I like the fact that your photography is just clean and natural. I've seen so many photos where the colors are oversaturated. You could tell sometimes when you see an HDR photo, it just jumps out at you, and you can see the glow around the edges of, you know, the lines within the photo. Mm-hmm. So it really is it's a balancing act between, you know, getting a good clean shot that pops but not overdoing it, and having a photo that's, you know, not on the other end of the spectrum where it's just a poor quality photo. So looks like you've got some really good, clean, consistent work. So
yeah, I mean, I think that speaks to sort of the second piece of that puzzle, which is about the post-processing, right? Mm-hmm. So what we realized is that you know, what we're using these images for is to market the most expensive asset that most people ever own, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there's very little, if any, testing, generally speaking, that goes into understanding, okay, if we show this photo to a buyer, how's that going to impact their decision as to whether to go see that property and ultimately buy it or not? And so what we did is we were able to eliminate a lot of the variables that happen in post-processing. So as you know, I mean, generally, when a photographer takes a picture, they then go back to their computer and they sit in Photoshop or Lightroom and they adjust things for hours on end. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you tell me, being a photographer, what your rule of thumb is as far as, you know, for every minute you spend shooting, how many minutes do you spend in front of a computer?
Yeah, you know, ultimately, I never became a photographer to sit in front of a computer, so I really wanted to try to find a way to fine tune that process to where the photos look good, not overly done, and I can get into a system and get out of there pretty quick. But
right,
yeah.
So, and that's what we find with most of our photographers too, is nobody says, I want to be a photographer so I can sit in front of a computer all day. You want to be out and about, you know, in awesome locations, shooting fun stuff. So we, you know, we've approached this from a much more scientific standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then I think that's perhaps why you see that the aesthetic of the image looks a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Because we're doing this in a way where we're saying, hey, what aesthetic is actually going to attract eyeballs to a screen?
Mm-hmm.
And the way we've done that is through focus groups, through research studies to understand what it is about an image that actually makes somebody literally look at it and click on it.
Yeah.
So it's all about psychology. We've taken things to a level where we're doing eye tracking studies, for example, to say when we show you this image, where does your eye go to? How long do you look at it as compared to this image? And so that we can really optimize that aesthetic and that appeal to know that when we deliver a photo marketing this property, it is optimized for buyers. And it's that's sort of the distinction, I think, between what we're doing versus a more typical photography method.
Yeah, yeah, good. Well, that's great. And just a kind of a side note too, just because, again, as I said earlier, a lot of times I think a lot of people don't understand the true value of what good photography does for your listing. And I can give a perfect example. Since moving back up here, I'm looking for a new doctor. Just, you know, I feel like I got to do the yearly physical thing. So I'm online, I'm looking at doctors, and I'm looking at their headshots. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding myself literally just picking based off of who looks best in a photo. And I think the same is very much true when it comes to real estate. You go to a listing and you could tell that the photography is not quite there. You tend to just like scroll past it much faster. So
I thought you were going to suggest that buyers and sellers should hire agents based on just their headshot. Huh?
No, but you know, to that point as well, you know, the headshot's important too.
No, there's no doubt that it's an important piece of the puzzle. I think that what we find most interesting, what I'm passionate about, is the impact that our digital world has had on how we buy things.
Yeah.
Because that's starting to be represented in agents' realization that this stuff is so important, and everybody's realization. But what's really cool is, I mean, there are all sorts of studies that you can find that will talk about how our brains have actually changed. Our brains have been rewired to focus more on certain senses because of the world that we live in. And so in this you know, context, more of our buying decisions today are based on visual cues than they ever were. I mean, 10 years ago, we would have paid more attention to the details of the you know, reading the features of something, or the smells or the sounds. Today, because of the internet, it's all about what our eyes see, and that's how we tend to make our buying decisions. So
yep.
It's super important, and it's fun for us to think about the impact that really has in the buying decision.
And things are changing quickly to that regard as well. So it seems like just yesterday, drone footage of homes was kind of like the new crazy thing. Like, you couldn't believe that we were sending drones up into the sky to capture aerial shots. And now, I mean, it's pretty commonplace. You know, I don't know what percentage of listings have an actual drone shot, but more and more each day. And I know it's a pretty easy thing to do. And thinking about that, where are things going next, do you think? I mean, I found myself watching an article talking about the future of buying a car, and it showed someone with the VR headset on, and they were looking at a car, and they can swipe to change colors, and they can turn the car around, and they can open the door and literally get inside the car. Seems like a game changer, and it seems like that really applies to what we're looking at here in real estate. So what do you foresee happening as far as the photography world in real estate goes?
For sure. There's no doubt that there are a lot of things changing very quickly, and that's what makes this a fun space to be in is, you know, we're always looking at where there are opportunities, what's that next technology. The interesting thing about it is that, and I think you brought up VR, you know, we can talk about VR as a good example of the fact that the technology is there. The technology exists. We can do some really cool stuff with the VR. At the same time, we are not investing heavily at the moment in VR. And to be candid, the reason for that is that we believe that this is the largest transaction that, again, most people will ever make in their lives, and people want to kick the tires, right? So what's the purpose? We want to think about VR as a cool tool. It's fun to be able to say, hey, I'm an agent, and this is what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to do virtual reality of your property. But what we want to look at is what's the end game, and has that really impact what the buyers are seeing. Mm-hmm. And the buyers are not, what we're finding, are not making decisions based on the fact that, oh, there's virtual reality for this property or not. Today, you know, perhaps it's a little bit early with VR. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has a headset on their kitchen table. I'm sure there will be a day where that's the reality. But even then, the question becomes, are buying decisions made then and there? Not to digress too far, but I read an article recently that was talking about VR as it relates to the movie industry. Mm-hmm. When virtual reality technology became really commercially available, everybody thought, oh, this is going to completely change Hollywood. Every movie is going to be VR. You don't go to a movie theater anymore. You're just going to throw your headset on and everything's interactive and all that. And what ended up happening is that the directors really rejected it. And they said, what this does is it eliminates our ability to tell a story that we want to tell. Because if you're a movie watcher and you can choose to turn around and look 360 degrees, how do I focus your attention as a director on what I actually want you to see in the storyline? And I found that really interesting because it's we see the same thing happening in real estate, which is if I'm an agent and I'm marketing this property, I know what I want to market. So am I really serving my seller well if I all of a sudden let buyers go online and see every single thing they want to see, and all of a sudden I lose some of the control that comes in marketing the property? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. There's all the technologies there, and at the same time, we always spend a lot of time and we discuss a lot internally, what is the impact of the technology? How does it affect the end user here and our client, who is the listing agent? How does it affect them in their ability to sell a property? So to answer your question, I mean, drones, virtual reality, all sorts of fun technologies out there. I mean, there are companies out there that are talking about putting tripods, cameras on Roombas, you know, and programming them to automatically know where to shoot. So you could say, well, we don't need a photographer anymore. We don't, you know, there's all sorts of technology. It's a matter of how does it actually impact what we're trying to do? Does it achieve the end game versus it being sort of a fun, you know, bell and whistle that we can talk about? And that's sort of where we're at right now, is that we're sort of at this cross section of, okay, the technology is there to do some really cool things, and can we apply it in a way that actually benefits the user? So to answer your question, you know, more directly, we're looking at all sorts of technology. We see things like 2D floor plans, where, you know, we can actually automatically create those without any interaction. You know, nobody has to measure anything. We're taking data, big data, you know, from the images themselves, from images across our whole portfolio, to know, you know, what are the dimensions of what we're looking at in an image, and things like that that are really fun, fun problems to solve, and we believe provide a more immediate value to the end user.
That seems like a much more practical use of technology right now. And I agree with you to your point about the movie industry, and can VR ever replace that, in not only to the point that you made, that it could lead a viewer to be distracted or distract themselves from the storyline. You know, there's also just the experience of going to a movie theater. And I went out with my wife just a couple of weeks ago to a movie, and it was just felt good to get out of the house and get into a movie theater and have a drink and some popcorn and enjoy a movie. Just as with buying a house, we're fresh off the boat. We just bought a house. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine not actually walking through the house. I can't imagine not driving through the neighborhood to see if it would be a good one for our kids. So, I agree with you. I don't think that technology is ever going to replace the need to go and visit a property and tour the neighborhood. So, definitely good on that.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest opportunities we see are really in big data. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly not the first one to talk about how much opportunity there is when the industry really understands how to consolidate data and control data in a way that truly benefits the consumer. And that's where, you know, in our ability to consolidate data and our ability to get data from the properties that we market, what we're trying to do is to identify how can we use that data to better service our clients. So, you know, for example, if we can take data based on performance of properties across an entire portfolio, across an entire brokerage, and we can then use that to create automated tools for, you know, that actually serve that brokerage, that to us provides a lot more value than say, you know, having some really fancy cool toy that they can play with until the next cool toy comes out. We really want to find ways to create synergy by aligning incentives with buyers and sellers, and also with the listing agents and the selling agent as well.
Well, speaking of big data, I know that the disruptors, it's a big topic in this industry. People are always curious who's going to disrupt this industry and how, and is it, you know, is it going to be Amazon, or is it going to be one of these other big sites? And should agents be, or agencies be scared or nervous about this? What are your thoughts about that? And who do you see as being a potential disruptor in this business?
I don't think that agents have to worry about whether agents will exist in the marketplace. What I do think is that the models that exist today are very much under the microscope, and that so specifically, I'm drawing a blank now on the name of the company. I heard a podcast recently. What is it? Where, you know, it's a service to order clothing, you know, that is very popular with Stitch Fix. Thank you so much.
I've never heard of them, so yeah. That's new to me.
Stitch Fix. So I was talking to or listening to the founder of Stitch Fix talk about the service, right? And from their standpoint, they're a SaaS. They're really a you know, SaaS company. They're a company that everything's done online, and then they send you the package. And so their initial premise was, hey, we're going to eliminate anything having to do with a stylist. You don't need to have a stylist. You don't need to go to a store and look at the clothes and have a salesperson tell you about them. Like, it's all going to be done through AI. It's all going to be done automatically. And what they found, which is interesting, I think relates to where the real estate space is right now, is that people still want the human connection. And so Stitch Fix, a company that is based on AI and big data about what your preferences are in clothing, they have a team right now of, I think, 6,000 individual stylists that you can still talk to and interact with in order to understand your preferences. And I think that speaks to the fact that people really want to have a personal interaction. It also speaks to the fact that there are some things that you're never going to be able to completely automate. That said, I think that there will be the future that I foresee is that there's sort of different levels of agents, right? If you're looking at a very cookie cutter transaction, maybe you're not a first time buyer, maybe it's your second purchase and you're kind of mid market. There's going to be a solution out there for you. I do believe that is for the most part automated, does not rely upon the standard, you know, model, whether it be the commission model or the standard, you know, sales model. At the same time, I think there's another tier, right? It's another tier of service that's provided that truly is a full concierge model. That's probably more similar to what we think of today when we think of real estate agents. So we're already seeing that start to happen with limited service agencies and things like that. I see that trend continuing. I don't see that real estate agents are going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, that's great to hear. And I'd say in closing, can you tell me, are there any agents that you know of that utilize your photos for more than just a listing? What else can you do with these photos that your photographers provide them? I mean, there's the obvious social media. Anything else that comes to mind?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, the way that we talk about it and the way we think about it for the sake of our clients is that the biggest mistake that a listing agent can make is thinking that they're marketing the listing to sell the house. Depending on what's going on in the market, if it's a buyer's or a seller's market, that may be the case, that the primary purpose of these listing photos, of all the content that Virtuance or anyone else is producing for you, is to market that property, because in lieu of marketing it, it's not going to sell. That said, today, I'd be crazy if I sat here and said, you need professional photos or you're not going to sell the house, right? Everyone would tell me I'm full of crap, because it's true. You could put up a picture of a dirty diaper on a house and put it up for $300,000 and it'll probably sell, right? Might take a little longer. It might not get, I've got young kids. You can tell it's what, hence the dirty diaper.
Record. I can relate to this one for sure.
First thing that popped into my head, right? It's probably the last thing I saw before I came over here. But you know, so you can do that and it'll still sell. What we talk about is that you are marketing the listing to market yourself. And if you're not utilizing everything that you gain from that listing to market yourself and help you win the next listing, you're missing out on a big opportunity. And it's an opportunity where most true, you know, highly productive mega agents, whatever you want to call them, that's where they really win, is they have found ways to capitalize on one listing to turn it into five other listings. Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question, as far as what you can do with it, you know, one of the things that we're really clear about is photo licensing is a huge topic right now due to some things going on in the industry. And we want to make sure, not only do we allow you as the agent, but we want to make sure that you're taking those photos that we provide you for the listing and you're using them to market yourself everywhere, every which way you can. And so that looks like obviously having them all over your social media, but it looks like making sure you get referrals from the folks who you sold that when the property sells, and then you're taking that content and the referral creates something quick, and we, you know, we can help this for help our clients do this, where you're putting something together that shows this is the actual house that was sold, here's the photos of it, and here's the comment, the testimonial from that client. So what you're doing is it's not just a testimonial, but you're actually creating more of a connection that, oh, this is a real property, really is something that they went through. It's not just somebody off the street, you know, with a quote about something. So simple. It's, you know, we always say keep it simple, stupid. And those are the kinds of opportunities that we think you can have from your listings. The other thing is, you know, we see a lot of agents who pull their listings down as soon as they sell. And I'm not talking about on MLS. Obviously, you're going to say that it's sold on MLS, but there are no regulations about what kind of what images, what content you can keep up. Say that it's sold, but make sure you've got a property website that has that live forever with your name on it. It'll say sold on it. That content's out there forever. And that's marketing you at that point. So something that I think is really easy, low-hanging fruit, if you will, that agents can take advantage of, whether it be our listing photos or anybody else's that they're hiring.
And again, to me, it comes down to consistency. So if you get to an agent's website and you've got a gallery of the properties that they have represented, and the quality goes from good to bad to good and then bad again, it creates almost a subliminal frustration, I think, to the viewer. And I think when you have a good, consistent gallery that's, you know, one to the next, always, you know, consistent and good quality photography, to me, I think that creates a more pleasurable experience and a better attitude and opinion that that your prospects will basically put upon your company. So
it brings credibility. I mean, I think that you hit it on the head. I mean, consistency is everything. At Virtuance, we like to say that success equals consistency over time. It doesn't even, you know, if you're doing the right thing, right? You can't do the wrong thing all the time and hope and think it'll create success. But if you're doing the right thing, it might not create success for you one time or two times, but if you're consistent about that over a long period of time, that's where success comes from. Because most people don't do things consistently. They just don't. And that's where there's an opportunity, you know? So, you know, we like telling stories all day long about, look at Airbnb, you know, to the extent that your listeners know about how Airbnb got started, the big aha for them was all about the listing photos. It was all about the fact that when the photos look good, they get a better result. So they invested a ton of energy and effort in finding ways to make sure they had professional, high quality photos. We also like talking about the fact that we'll ask agents, how many clicks do you think it takes me in order to identify, to see every single property that you've listed in the last year and all of the photos that you've produced? How many clicks do I need from the time I sit down at my computer to find that information?
Oh, a lot, right?
That's what most people think, that it's a lot, right? Two clicks.
Two.
I can go to any portal, right? I could, you know, it could be Zillow, it could be any portal you want, And it literally, on Zillow as an example, takes two clicks for me to see all of your listings and all the photos for those listings over the last year. So what do you think the first thing that's happening is when you, after you leave the listing appointment, right, and husband and wife are talking in the living room about, well, what do you think? They're not just going to sit there and say, did you like her? Did you like him? They're Googling your name, and in two clicks, they're going to see everything you did. So if you just told them you use professional photos and you got the best stuff all the time, but then they go on and they see, say, a property that's below the median market price, maybe it was a $200,000 property and you didn't market it very well, they see that, and all of a sudden you just lost a lot of credibility.
Yep.
And you know, and we always look and say, just because you're making a decision as an agent to market certain properties differently, how does that sit with the actual sellers of those properties? You know, would you ever go to a seller of a $300,000 property and say, well, your property's not quite up to the price point where I would give you the best service, so I'm going to give you this service. Right. You would never do that, right?
Right.
But we do that all day long. Agents do that. We see that all day long when it comes to the way that properties actually are marketed.
So. Got it. Well, this has been great. We're going to wrap it up, but I appreciate you being here once again. Your company is Virtuance, VIRTUANCE.com. And where in the country are your photographers located? Are you all over? Or?
We're pretty much all over. We've founded here in Denver, but we're in 27 different markets.
Okay.
As of now, I have to think because we're opening new markets all the time. But we're going to be in just shy of 30 markets before the end of the year. We're expanding pretty quickly, and we'd love the opportunity to you know, show people what we can do. And you know, the other piece of the puzzle is we love providing free content. So if it's just a matter of helping everybody understand, you know, how can you take a photo that is going to make your property show off a little bit better than it would otherwise, we've got all kinds of resources at virtuance.com to help folks with that as well.
That's great. And I was looking at your website too, and your blog is also an abundance of resources as well. So I would encourage our audience to go to your website and check out your blog too, because it looks like you've got a lot of valuable content in there too. But
thanks, Mark.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks so much for coming along here. I appreciate taking you away from your work and your family for a little conversation, but I think that our audience is going to really appreciate what you have to say. So
it's been a lot of fun. I appreciate it, Mark. I'm a little bit further on this Moscow mule than you are. So
no, mine's
do,
pretty but. Much empty. So.